During the pandemic, kids are spending more time online than ever before. Parents can benefit by understanding how that affects their kids' mental health. This podcast, presented by the NTSC Cybersecurity Team, focuses on what many kids are experiencing online, what parents should know, and how those parents can better protect their children. Our guest is Tatiana Jordan. She's Chief Parenting Officer of an Atlanta-based technology company called Bark, which monitors children's online conversations for safety concerns and then alerts their parents. Conducting the interview in this podcast is Julie Bryant-Fisher.
What currently are the biggest dangers you see kids facing when they're online, either gaming or chatting or participating in social media activities?
Yeah, the biggest dangers that we're seeing for children spending so much time online, it surrounds their mental health, because all of the different issues that we flag for tie into mental health. It really ranges from child to child and from age to age. So at Bark, we alert to issues of cyberbullying, sexual content, thoughts of suicide and depression, potential drug use, and online predators. All of those issues tie back into the bigger umbrella of mental health. And not only that, but just the amount of time that children are spending in front of a device can really affect their mental health, and is actually shown to rewire their brains at a very critical stage. And so there's really so much to think about. It's hard.
Yeah, I was looking on your site, and you all had some really great statistics about what you've seen during the pandemic in terms of any spikes in certain types of security for kids, and even some decreases in certain kinds of things we might have been worried about.
Yeah, so one thing that was really staggering for us to observe was that starting March 13th, when everything kind of shut down, all the way through now, the rate of online predation and the rate at which we would flag online predators to law enforcement increased by 23%. So that's really rough, because we know that children are online even more now than they were before. And unfortunately, the people that like to prey on children are taking advantage of that. And it's platform agnostic. It's happening on Instagram, it's happening on Snapchat, it's happening on gaming platforms, it's happening through just text chat apps like WhatsApp and Kick. No matter where kids are, unfortunately, the predators are there. And so that was a really staggering thing to see. We're also thankfully seeing a decrease in violent alerts. So pre-pandemic, the rate at which we would send alerts around school shooting threats, for example, was unfortunately high. And now, because children are not in school and congregating together, those alert types thankfully went down. It's fascinating to be living this real-time experiment, you know, where we have a control of everybody having to be home at once, not at work, not at school. And one unfortunate thing that we're seeing as a result of that is an increase in domestic violence and child abuse. Children used to go to school, and a trusted adult, teacher, counselor would be able to observe if this sort of thing might be happening at home. Well, now children are stuck at home, and the perpetuators, you know, are their parents or caregivers, and there's nobody to advocate for them really besides our alerts.
When you talk about your alerts, I guess there's really not much related to domestic violence, or is there? Is there something that you typically, I'm just, as we're bringing that up, that's one I have not thought about in terms of a way that there's a digital solution or a technology solution to something like that.
Yeah, it can definitely alert to instances of domestic violence when children are involved. Due to our laws and our policies as a company, we do not monitor adults. You know, once a child turns 18, the monitoring shuts off. But chances are, that we are getting alerts around abuse of a child on behalf of one of the adults in the house, we can likely infer that that's happening to a partner as well.
Well, let's shift gears to talking about what we as parents can do to protect kids when it comes to online activities. It feels like such a big, huge thing to tackle, especially for you know, parents who are not natives to technology, don't understand the lingo, the emoji meanings, and don't understand the chat functions in gaming, for example. What would you say if you were sitting next to a parent or across from a parent and they just said, look, just give me the top five things I can do. What would you say for them?
The top five things I would say to a fellow parent when thinking about how to keep your kid as safe as possible online is first to start the conversations early and have them often. You know, when we were growing up, our parents may or may not have had the birds and bees conversation with us. And it was like, one-time thing, and they never wanted to touch it again. Well, technology is not that clear cut. And so starting when your kids are little, talking to them about the fact that there are tricky people online who may or may not actually be who they say they are, and they may have bad intentions, and starting to weave that conversation into their brain about PII, that's personally identifiable information. So if you are gaming, if you are chatting, if you're creating profiles, don't use your real name, your age. Don't ever tell anybody where you live, where you go to school. Those pieces of information that can potentially be used against you, again, by tricky people, is a good conversation to start having when kids are very young, even before they can read. Then they start to learn how to read, and you know, they get interested in creating videos and perhaps creating their own profiles on YouTube and TikTok and that sort of thing. And so having those conversations around body positivity and body preservation, you know, much like you wouldn't go to the pool without a bathing suit covering very specific areas, those same areas should never be captured via photo or video and shared with anyone online, even if you trust them, because bad things can happen. And having those conversations also around the fact that just because someone says they might delete a photo or video, they could be lying. And there's also, you know, a screenshot that can happen. If you upload content to places that are meant to disappear, like Snapchat or Instagram stories, again, somebody can screen record, screen grab, and also that media can live on a server somewhere. And so it never truly really goes away once you've captured it with the device, whether it's a photo or video or just maybe something hurtful that you may have said out of anger. You know, teaching kindness and empathy is key. And that's really critical. The next thing I would say is to have open and honest conversations about mental health in your family. Much like when your child scrapes their knee and needs a Band-Aid or gets sick and needs antibiotics, if your child's head and heart start to feel not well, it's okay to talk about it. It's okay as an adult to share your struggles with them so they know they're not alone, and they know that they don't have to pretend to be strong for you. And you as a parent don't have to pretend to be strong and perfect for them either. If they know that you have perhaps struggled in your life, they'll be more likely to talk to you. And it's really critical that we have these conversations around mental health and reduce the stigma, because the rate of suicide for children 10 and up in this country is on the rise. It is now the second leading cause of death in that age range. And it's horrible. But now that we know that, we have to do something about it. And it starts with talking with our kids and paying attention to those signs. And I think I'm probably on four or five now. There's a lot of thrown out here, but I do want to wrap it up and not totally overwhelm. You know, I'd say talking with your children about the difference in real life versus virtual life, pointing out things like the fact that, wow, mommy's Pinterest board is perfection, but mommy's actual house doesn't look like that. And what does that say to the people that follow me? You know, like, how authentic am I being? Have I ever posted a photo online of me maybe without makeup or that wasn't flattering? Am I talking about not only the good things, but maybe the bad things and the challenging things? If I'm not doing that, the perception of who you maybe follow online as well is skewed. And so just letting them know that the more that they're consuming this content of perfection, that it can make them feel bad inside, and let them know to step back and take a look at real life. And nobody's life is as perfect as they're portraying it online. And just being aware of that and being aware of how much time you're spending consuming that sort of content can really affect you, and tying it back to mental health. So there's a lot there.
There is a lot there. You know, I didn't think that that's where you were going to go. I thought you were going to rattle off, you know, hey, when they're on gaming sites, turn off chat functions. But I think what you're trying to reach people with is, yes, all that, but also fundamentally high level, it's the time they're on, the conversations you need to have. That's, as a parent, the role that you're needed in right now.
It is, because if you are having those conversations with your children about mental health and the time they're spending online, it will become more apparent to you when those sort of things are happening. If a predator is chatting with your child, you know, in PS4, your child will change. There will be differences. And if you've had these conversations, they'll probably feel more likely to come to you to share that with them. If you're talking to them about tricky people, if you're talking to them about not sharing PII, again, it's a child may not realize what's happening, or they may feel guilty, or they may feel confused. And honestly, they may feel afraid to share because they might lose access to those sort of things. So if you can convey to them that they can share anything with you without fear of punishment, then that will release that burden from their shoulders and know that you guys can navigate it together, whether it's a predator, whether it's sextortion, whether it's cyberbullying, whether they just feel excluded from something they may have seen a friend sharing online. Like, the list of issues that I could rattle off that children will encounter will, you know, span much longer than this interview was intended. And the precautions that you can take for each specific incident also run the gamut, right?
Right.
Every single platform has some sort of way that you can have a parental control involved, whether it's screen time or content or turning features on and off. But if you haven't done the work of knowing what your child is accessing, and even if you don't like to play Minecraft, just sitting beside them and watching it, looking at is it violent? Is it scary? Can you chat with anybody in the world? You need to look at what they're doing through that lens of parenting, and then you will gain familiarity with it.
Very good advice, and so true. Lord knows how many Minecraft games I've played. So we talked about the pandemic really impacting the amount of screen time kids are experiencing. Are there any new online issues that have cropped up that the pandemic has specifically provoked, increased, or even helped?
Unfortunately, just finding the truth around something so new is very hard. And even from sources like the World Health Organization that seem to waffle a bit, you know what I mean? So teaching your children how to find sources of truth in media, teaching them that while there are many media outlets, some skew more liberal and some skew more conservative, and you have to figure out where you fall and who you want to get your news from. And perhaps it's not the best idea to only get it from one source. You know what I mean? Like, form your own opinions, form your own stories. Even, you know, when we were kids learning that, oh my gosh, a textbook was written by a human with an opinion. And so I need to read other things about the specific issue, just helps with that broader conversation. And so back to the question about the pandemic specifically, you know, it's been hard, and children are anxious and scared, much like adults, because we want to know, is it safe? Is it safe to touch our groceries? Do we need a mask? How contagious is this? Was this planted from a foreign country? Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it ranges, right? And so working together to find as much truth as you can, leaning on reliable sources of data, And also knowing when it's time to disconnect. You know, I just had to turn the television off for certain times over the past few months. I had to spend less time on Twitter and Facebook because it was overwhelming. We as humans have never, ever consumed this much content at once with 24/7, 365 access. And we've got to pay attention to what it does to our brains and our hearts. And now being in this phase where there's, political unrest around civil rights, I was fascinated by the fact that my 11-year-old knew about the riots, not because of me or his dad, but because of TikTok and YouTube. And so he had one question for me, and that's just, are we safe? You know, we live in Atlanta. Mommy, are we safe? And I'm glad he asked. What if he hadn't? And what if he was just worried about that? And so just know that your children are going to encounter what's happening in the world, whether you have the TV on in the living room or not, is important to know.
Yeah, that's so true. You know, similarly here, that was the question. It was really, are we okay? Are they going to get us? It was that kind of stuff that kids would think about first, safety and security. What are the biggest, I don't know, or I didn't know moments that you often encounter hearing parents face when it comes to their kids' online activities that you think to yourself, how could they not know that? But there's just these common, I didn't know. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't know that. Are there some common ones out there?
There are. It starts with location-based sharing and tracking. So I know when smartphones first came out and everybody was taking photos like crazy, you know, the big thing was you've got to turn off that location tracking in your settings because you post a photo online and anybody can figure out where that was taken, where you live, where you vacation. And so thinking about the location tracking aspects of the media that you post is important. Also certain apps like Snapchat. Snapchat has a Snap Maps feature that if on and your child is on it, can show anybody they're connected with where they are in real time. And that was one of the biggest things that I was like, oh my gosh, how do parents not know that? And not from a judgmental standpoint, but like, you know, you wouldn't send your kid to camp without just knowing a bit about it, you know, the address, who the counselor might be, et cetera. Don't let your kid download an app if you don't know what it can do. It's important. It's really important to know. And then also knowing things like just because your child has a private Instagram account, they can still receive direct messages or DMs from anyone in the world. That's a really big thing that a lot of parents didn't know. Certain technological things that kids are really good at, you know, hiding and deleting. There's things like vault apps that look like a calculator, but are meant to hide photos and screenshots of messages before they delete them, before you scan their phone to see what's happening on it. It's, you know, there's VPNs, virtual private networks. There's, you know, private browsing modes and it's a lot. And so there's no possible way that you can control everything as a parent. So you have to start to have those conversations early and often about, you know, how pornography can impact your brain and how tech affects your mental health and how no matter what you encounter online or what mistakes you make online, because kids will make mistakes, they're kids, you can always come to me and we will navigate it together.
My gosh, hearing you talk, my first instinct was just to take the phone and throw it out the window. But to your point, you know, this is where we are, right? So that might not be an option. And they're going to find out, just like all of us when we were growing up, found out things before our parents might have wanted us to. So having those conversations becomes really critical.
Yeah.
What about knowing that trends and dangers can shift quickly? Have you seen anything new on the horizon? Any new threats that parents should be watching out for when it comes to cybersecurity for their kids?
You know, right now, TikTok is all the rage. And they have actually rolled out some parental controls within their own app, and I applaud them for that. But just knowing that your child can encounter all of the things that you don't want them to, whether it's issues or people on that app, it's critical to know that before you allow them to have it. And if you do, navigate that with them. Also, the fact that, you know, as adults, we're tired. We are so tired. We go to bed and we just hope and pray that everybody else in the house is in bed as well. Well, if your kid can access their device, they might not be asleep. And that's so wrong for so many reasons, because their bodies are growing, their minds are developing. They need that time of rest. If they're on a screen all night long, bad things are happening. Their bodies aren't resting and repairing. It's just not a good thing. So letting your child have connected devices in the bedroom is a bad idea. One mistake that I have personally made as a parent and have worked to rectify. And, they shouldn't have a smartphone in the bedroom at night. They shouldn't charge their devices in the bedroom at night. That's a big thing. It's an easy thing. It's a free thing that any parent can do. Just get those connected devices out of the bedroom. Shut down the Wi-Fi in your house if you can at night. Just cut it off. There's no need for it at 2 a.m.
We've talked about so many overwhelming things and so many really smart things to discuss about protecting kids. What about positives? Are there things out there that, in the midst of all the protective things we need to do, is there anything good about online activities that you've observed that we can sort of cheer about or
yes, to? Absolutely. You know, I mean, as much as I'm thankful that I did not have the internet and social media as a child, it could have been really cool in a lot of ways. Just the ability to learn. You know, like I had to go to the library or buy books if I wanted to learn anything about anything. Now our kids can Google stuff. That's amazing. It's amazing. You know what I mean? Encyclopedias used to be really expensive. So just the fact that your kid can learn anything that they want to is incredible. You know, with Khan Academy and Skillshare and YouTube, you want to learn how to make slime? Boom, right there. You know, it's great. And so use that opportunity of unprecedented access to education to learn things as a family, especially, you know, now that it's summertime and there are no camps, you know, great time to learn how to do some stuff. Also for children who are creative and want to express, you know, their singing potential or acting or photography or videography or graphic design. I mean, there's so many great things that you can do with tech, coding, science, user experience and user interface, you know, during, you know, what is a very unfortunate time of job uncertainty. The one field that is still strong is technology. So if you can help your child have a love for and affinity for tech, even if they don't traditionally gravitate towards STEM topics, is a really great thing to do and instill in your child. And of course, connecting. You know, my mom has asthma and lives with my 97 and 98 year old grandparents. So we haven't seen her in months, but thank God there is FaceTime. And so we can still connect virtually. And so being able to connect with loved ones and friends through Zoom or FaceTime or Skype or fill in the blank is a wonderful, wonderful tool to have that, gosh, if this pandemic happened 10, 20 years ago, we would be even more isolated.
That's Tatiana Jordan, Chief Parenting Officer at BARC, interviewed by Julie Bryant-Fisher. Thanks for listening.